Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Corey Barnes is back at quarterback now. Barnes in the end zone. Gets it away. Deep down the middle.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Welcome to another edition of Something's Brewing. How's everybody doing? Episode number 7, getting close to Christmas time, and man, I don't know how you guys are doing, but I am ready to take a little bit of time off. Producer Dan, how are you?
I'm done.
I hear you, man.
Is Christmas over yet? No? Yeah. Okay, soon, right?
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming. Okay. It's going to be great.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Yeah, we're about 12 hours late than we have over the last few weeks.
Oh, that's true.
Because, by the way.
Yes.
This episode is brought to you by smartbeers.com, who invites you to, if you're going to drink during the holidays, we encourage you to drink smart.
That was really good.
Thank you for keeping us out of hot water. I did it in the first 2 minutes, so I think we're all cool now, right? All right. So the reason why we couldn't do it yesterday afternoon is because I went to Knott's Berry Farm with the family during the holidays.
Oh.
On a weekday.
Oh, so that's your priority? Your family is more important than this podcast?
Yes, Dan.
Okay.
Well, my wife is listening. Absolutely.
Absolutely without question. Okay.
And without question in general.
Yeah.
But had a very nice time. But who wants to get on the freeway at all in the afternoon or evening in Los Angeles?
Yeah. No.
So, but we did have a great time. So
yeah, did you? I bet.
So we're recording on Friday. We're really excited to tell everybody we got a fantastic interview set up, like we said, with Mr. Eric Chenoweth from the number one college basketball team in the country, Kansas. So McDonald's All-American, draft pick of the New York Knicks. So we got a great interview that Dan and I both did together.
That's true.
I thought both of us did a fantastic job.
I thought it was great. And I have actually even heard of a bunch of the teams that he's been on.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You heard of that team from China?
No. No, not heard of that.
I've not heard of the Chinese.
No.
All right. So for those of you joining us for the first time and for all of our loyal listeners, make sure you stick around because we got a great interview with Eric Chenoweth.
Yeah, he's
a lot of real stories. And just like the show, I think you're going to like it. And you know what I was thinking the other day, Dan?
No.
You know the movie Facebook? You know
when you said, you know the movie Facebook, I thought you were talking about the movie Face Off.
Yeah.
So I was like, why is he bringing up Face Off?
I actually love Nicolas Cage movies, too. My wife hates Nicolas Cage. I actually love him.
Oh, good.
But
what if Nicolas Cage played the founder of Facebook?
Eric Chenoweth?
No. Oh, that'd be, interesting. Movie pitch.
He'd have to get taller.
Okay, so the Facebook movie, which I think is called The Social Network.
Right.
Not to be
In the Facebook movie, The Social Network.
Yes, sir.
There's a part where Mark Zuckerberg's character is in the dorm room and everyone wants to monetize everything. And he has this sort of aloof attitude, even better than Mark Zuckerberg's real life aloof attitude. and he's like, we don't even know what it is yet. We don't know what it could become.
Right.
I admit I had a vision of we don't even know what Something's Brewing really is yet.
No, we don't.
And we don't know what it could become.
We don't know. Listen, in 2 years, we could be in front of some subcommittee
in Congress
being questioned about the amount of power that we're wielding in the entertainment. I don't know.
And that's my point. You feel me?
I feel you.
All right.
Mr. Paws, can you explain to us, please, sir? When I Google coolest man alive, a picture of you comes up. Why is that? Is Dan tricking the system?
Who does Dan know at Google?
Exactly. Did you see the Google testimony?
Oh, my God.
It's awesome. No, sir. It's not possible to mess with the algorithm. Yeah, I don't care what you say.
Oh, really? But I want to make it very clear. I'm always doing it in what's in the best interest of the employees at Google and humanity in general. Next question, please.
and the stockholders. But
oh, I'm sorry, I forgot about that. All right, so moving on. A quick college football recap. Next week is going to be. I told you this a little bit about this earlier, Dan, or last week off the record. But next week I'm going to do a traveling show with one of my college teammates. About all of the big bowl games. We're going to do
your college teammates.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So we're not going to be in studio for those of you that are going to be worried that the sound quality is not going to be as good as it has been the last 4 or 5 weeks. But I'm going to be traveling to San Diego and doing a traveling show with one of my college teammates. So I'm pretty excited about that. But back to the college football recap.
Yes, sir.
So the really only one that I want to talk about or care about is that Arizona State Pac-12 team got beat in a bowl game by Fresno State. Mm-hmm. And Fresno State, beat us, beat UCLA, and now they beat a Pac-12 team in a bowl game. And I have a good buddy that's a Fresno State person, and he is one of the most annoying Fresno State fans ever. So that's really all I want to talk about for college football from a recap standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint. There's a period, which I know you don't know, Dan, which is the early signee process.
Yeah, I've been meaning to ask you about that. When does all that happen?
It's happening now.
Oh,
but
shoot.
Officially, National Signing Day happens on February 6th. So I've mentioned multiple times that we're going to work on trying to get Chip Kelly in here.
Yeah.
There's no reason to recap what we did early. UCLA, understandably, has not done anything amazing in the early signing period. So we'll recap what we did from a high school signing bonus. I'm sorry. Oh. Watch out for the donors.
No, there's no such thing as a high school.
These college kids are going there for school. anyway, so we'll recap that in a few weeks. After it really happens. But back to the college basketball recap. So not a big, not a big change in college basketball in regards to the top 10. And Kansas is still number one in college basketball.
Beautiful.
So like we said, I think it'd be a perfect opportunity to bring in Mr. Eric Chenoweth, all-star from Kansas, the top basketball team in the country. McDonald's All-American from 1997. Eric, how are you, sir?
I'm great, Corey. How you doing, man?
I can't complain. Don't forget to say hi to producer Dan.
What's up, Dan?
Hey, Eric. I feel bad that we don't have some kind of applause sound effect for you or something, some sort of major crowd cheer wave sound or something. I'm sorry.
Well, he was
a basketball player,
so he's not used to that big of a crowd.
A money sound or something stupid like that.
Exactly.
So we thought it would be great to bring in the Something Bruins listeners to an inside scoop on some, a super famous good friend from the college basketball ranks. Obviously, with the fact that Kansas is number one, Kansas you're playing fantastic. Every game they play is a big game. But, Eric, we thought we could start it off by, if you could remind everyone, where else were you considering coming out of high school, and why did you ultimately choose Kansas?
Yeah, thanks, man. It was interesting. My freshman year in high school, I was playing baseball as well, too, and then I got a letter from UCLA. I remember Jim Herrick wrote me a letter, and so that was my first basic scholarship offer. So UCLA was the first school to really recruit me. Obviously, they had a great staff back then with Lorenzo Romar and Steve Lavin and Mike Gottfried. I mean, they were, had some good teams back then.
California, obviously.
Yeah, I grew up in Orange, and so I knew about UCLA and John Wooden and his, all the things that he did there with, Bill Walton. I played traveling ball with Luke Walton, and so, I just knew UCLA very, very well. But then, obviously, so UCLA was there, Kansas, Duke, Notre Dame, Indiana, Kentucky, and Utah. I kind of narrowed it down to, I basically picked one school from each conference and then just kind of went from there. And then I took unofficial visits because I wanted to commit early and not have stress during my senior year and just be carefree and have fun. So I took all my visits. I committed to Kansas on August 1st after the recruiting period. It was actually Coach Williams' birthday, so it was a nice moment for us. Went to Kansas. I mean, obviously, Kansas recruited me really, really hard. They were at every single one of my games the entire month of July on the traveling circuit. And then, you know, first time I stepped foot in Allen Fieldhouse, I was like, okay, this is it. You know, it's all downhill from there. So that was basically it. And then chose Kansas. I didn't go to Kansas. I probably would have gone to Utah to play for Majerus.
Yeah.
Because he was such a great guy. And he was, you know, he's not with us anymore, but I just really enjoyed his company.
And so right when you walked, you know, onto, you know, Kansas's campus, tell us a little bit about, you know, what it's like going to school in a smaller town. I know Lawrence isn't Podunk, Kansas, because yeah, it's obviously a college town, but, you know, I'm unfamiliar going to school in LA, obviously. So what was it like being literally the big man on campus?
Well, it wasn't, because we had Ray Florence and Paul Pierce. So I was a little lower in the totem pole, obviously.
What about from a physical standpoint? You were bigger than those guys.
Yeah, I guess it was bigger than those guys. But
now, for clarification, I would say, how tall is Eric? Just so I can get a sense of
6'11".
I'm 7'1". Yeah, I'm 7'1". Oh, but I was about 235, 245 when I stepped on campus. So
yeah,
I'll say this: I'm guaranteed I was better looking than Ray. So I was the better looking big guy on campus. So, yeah.
And he still has and Eric still has a great head of hair, unlike both of you and I, Dan.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Thanks to my grandpa Lowell, my mom's dad. So thanks for that. So it was funny, though. I'll tell you, it wasn't like people said like a culture shock or something crazy. It wasn't like that. It was obviously there's people from the Midwest. So I was, you know, first day of class, I'm walking on campus. I got rainbow flip flops. I got split 55 cargo shorts cut off with a yellow Volcom shirt, you know, and maybe I had like some Oakleys on walking down campus.
Frog skins.
Everybody else was, yeah, no, I wouldn't rock those like you, bud. And so and then everybody else was wearing like polo khaki shorts and then, a polo shirt tucked in, like very Midwest with like Sperry's and the whole deal. So like, I'm walking in, these guys are like, who's this guy from California, whatever, you know, but hey, I am who I am, right? And so it was funny though, because I was wearing cargo shorts and nobody wore cargo shorts in 1997. And then sure enough, like I remember like my senior year, like the trends had moved to the Midwest. So like everybody was wearing rainbow flip-flops, cargo shorts. You know, they weren't wearing like Volcom or Quicksilver shirts, but they were at least, you know, getting some kind of style, you know, Justin. So, right. Yeah, but that was, I remember that. And then once it got cold, it was like, good night. And I was just, you know, any Eddie Bauer, the big and tall jacket I could find, I was wearing. Sure.
I've read online, I did a little research because as if we weren't good enough friends. You were in a fraternity as well?
I was a Sigma Nu, yes. Were you in a fraternity at UCLA?
No, they didn't let they strongly frowned upon it for the scholarship football players to be in fraternities at UCLA. But if I was going to be in a fraternity at UCLA, it would have been Sigma Nu or Sigma Chi. So we're cool. Practically brothers.
Yeah. So I wasn't like a full fledged like. I didn't go through Rush and all those different things. I did as much as I could. I did
who's
my interviews.
Who's going to haze him, Dan?
He's a 7'1",
yeah.
200. Well, yeah, no.
Yeah, well, we did the Century Club, I remember, like, on Yellow Night, and I remember that was a long night. But I didn't have time. It was great because the house was, like, right on campus. So I could, like, go to class, break, get lunch, and they had a spread every day, and then I'd go back to class. And so because we actually went to class at Kansas on, like, some other schools. And so it was great. I still have friends to this day. I actually donate money every once in a while if they're doing some renovations to the house. And then every year I go back for a Kansas game. And every year we go back and I kidnap a kid and take them out in Lawrence with me. So that's an event. Yeah. Yeah, nice. So I'm still close to the house. Yeah.
So how about your playing days there? Can you give us any memorable moments that sort of stick out in your mind that was – just obviously, you know, one of a kind experience on the college basketball court.
Oh, God,
besides
so
playing
many.
At Allen Fieldhouse every home game.
Yeah. Like, well, senior night at Allen Fieldhouse is like the best ever. I mean, they announce everybody you're standing in the middle of the court. It was like a 10-minute standing ovation. They're throwing flowers. I mean, it's a really, I got the chills just thinking about it now. But I'll be honest with you, man. We were rated top five all 4 years out there. And so, my freshman year, we got knocked out in the second round by Rhode Island. They had Katina Mobley and Tyson Wheeler. They killed us. And Jim Herrick was a coach, ironically enough. You know, my sophomore year, we lost to Duke. My I'm sorry. We lost to Kentucky in the Superdome. We had them beat, but they hit a last-second three to go to overtime and beat us. My junior, we lost to Duke in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And then my senior year, we lost to Illinois in San Antonio at the Alamo Dome when Bill Self was a coach at Illinois. So I'll be honest with you, and you're a competitor like me, so you might remember this. You remember the losses much more than you remember the wins.
Right.
So for me, like it's still emotional to these days, and it bothers me still that I never went to a Final Four, never won a national championship. So those are honestly the things I remember. But going back, I mean, watching Paul Pierce have a, 18-0 streak by himself against Oklahoma at home on senior night when he was a junior. We knew it was his last game at Kansas. Winning the Big 12 Conference as a freshman, winning the Big 12 Conference championship as a sophomore, going to the Sweet 16 as a senior. Like, those are some things that I can hang my hat on.
Oh.
But so, like, you only remember the games that you wish you would have won.
So, Dan, you got to admit, that was a pretty good art of humble bragging.
That was fantastic.
There. Wasn't that pretty good?
He's a master level for sure.
What are you talking about?
we talk on the show all the time about how I have mastered the art of humble bragging, and you just did it beautifully. So thank you.
No, I didn't, because I actually we're going to get into Kansas basketball later, and we're the number one team in the country right now. There's, for every article about us being number one, there's 10 saying what's wrong with our team.
Right.
And when you're in a program like Kansas, if you don't win the national championship, the season is a complete failure. That's it. Like, right. No questions about it. It's like, you didn't win the championship. That was a waste of time. On to the next year.
Right.
And so when I say I won the Big 12 and this and that and did some nice things,
that was still a failure in your mind.
It may be a humble brag to you, but like, to me, like, people, like, Kansas fans are like, oh yeah, well,
he's making a good point. He's older than me. He's more mature, and that's why he does what he just did. I dislike UCLA fans that act like UCLA basketball is still in the John Wooden era. You know, they're like oh my, because UCLA will always be a basketball school over a football school. But before we move on to the next stage of your career, Eric, I do have to remind my listeners. I told a story last week about how we played at Kansas one year when I was in college. Your football team was, you guys probably, we probably would have had a harder game if you could put the basketball team out there. But my buddies spent that evening bar hopping in Lawrence, Kansas. They rented a school bus and they bar hopped in Lawrence, Kansas. That's a real thing.
That's how we did it all the time. So we
oh, that's a thing.
So it's confirmed.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, the frats were dry. So you would have to have parties off campus. So we had the schoolhouse, which was an old, early 19th century schoolhouse that was converted into like a big party hall. There was the teepees, which was like, go figure teepees. There's just open areas to have big parties where you take buses in. And then there's, keg parties, and you take buses back to campus, basically how it worked.
All right, so we're not full of shit, Dan.
Right?
No.
Okay. All right.
Well, you are, but not on that one.
Not about the school bus. Great.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on. So you, moving into the NBA, you get drafted as the 43rd pick overall in the 2001 NBA draft. So I'm jealous because I signed a free agent contract in the NFL. I can't even pretend that I was drafted. So talk a little bit about that. You went to the New York Knicks. Jeff Van Gundy, I understand you have a great relationship with him. talk a little bit about your how that process was and how exciting it was. I'm sure you wanted to go higher, but tell us about that.
Here, and before I get to that, though, here's, you might call it a humble brag, but had I left it for my sophomore year, I'd probably been a top 15 pick, decided to come back. Obviously, Drew Gooden and Nick Collison came along, took a lot of the time and minutes, and I had some injuries. And so, eventually I was a second-round pick later on. But it's interesting, the experience I had if I left early opposed to when I came back. And so I remember before the draft, I think I had like 25 workouts with different teams. We had the combine in Phoenix and Chicago back then. Now they just have Chicago. I didn't expect to be a first-round pick. If I was going to go in the first round, it would be late first with Houston, but they obviously didn't pick me. Second round came around and I was like, okay. I was talking to my agent and I was like, I hope I don't get picked actually, because then you have freedom to go wherever you want. Whereas if you're a second round pick, there's no guarantee, but you're stuck with that team and you're kind of at their mercy. And so you know, 40s came around, and I remember the deputy commissioner at the time came up to the podium and had the card and goes, New York, you're really going to love this one, you know, with the 43rd pick, the New York Knicks select Eric Chenoweth. And then it was in Radio City Music Hall, the whole deal. And like, I don't think there was one cheer. It was more boos than you've ever probably heard. And then, you know, I went home with my parents and like, my mom starts screaming and freaking out. My dad, we're all jumping around. We had a great moment. And then obviously, you know, Jeff Van Gundy and Scott Layden called and, you know, you're just elated. And then, and so, you know, you're on a flight the next day. So I was out to in the Knicks facility is in, you know, SUNY Purchase, which is like an hour north of the city. And so I was staying at a Marriott Residence Inn and working out every day with Jeff Van Gundy and Steve Clifford, who was an assistant, and Tom Thibodeau, who was assistant as well, too. Me and the other pick, Michael Wright, you know, rest his soul, every day for 6 hours in this hot gym with no AC, you know, leading up to camp. And so, I mean, literally it was the end of June, July, we had summer league in Boston, August, September, and then camp starts in October. And then leading up to camp, you know, at the end of September, and this is after September 11th, and I happen to be on 42nd and 2nd in New York City on September 11th doing an appearance for for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, a healthy living campaign they were doing. And so I actually had to, you know, walk out of the city and catch a train out and the whole deal. It was pretty traumatic. We could talk about that later if you want. But so I was like, okay, I had earned my stripes, paid my dues all summer, you know, went through this. I felt like a real New Yorker at the time. And then a week before camp, you know, Van Gundy pulls me and he goes, hey, just want to let you know, you're not going to make this team and you're not going to spend a second playing for me. And I was like,
tell me how you really feel.
Wow.
So
did
well,
he
thank
really
you
put it
you,
that way?
For, oh yeah, yeah, he did. And so wow. I call my agent. I'm like, well, this is a conversation I just had. He's like, well, let me get you out of there. So they renounced my rights. And then, you know, I went to Sacramento for camp with the Kings and got cut there. And then my journeyman of a career started from there. But it was funny because I found out later that Scott Layden, the director of player personnel, I think he was a team president at the time, really liked me and wanted to draft me. And then I was available. And they were at the war room kind of going around and everybody's throwing our names. And then Scott kind of pounded the table and said, we're going with Chenoweth. And half the room was like, yeah, okay. And then half the room sat back and slapped their foreheads and were like, oh, no. And so it was – so I was kind of like – destined to fail at the start, but still, I'll be honest with you, it's crazy. I never played one game for the Knicks, but anytime I go back there, their front office and the people that work there are amazing. You know, they last time I was there, they gave me tickets to a game, and they are of all the franchises in the NBA, like the Knicks really is a family, and they're really a well-run organization. Regardless of what they've done, they do take care of their players.
Yeah,
you know?
Regardless of what Stephen A. Smith says about him.
Yeah. Well, he's a Philly guy, so he's, you know, whatever. But so, yeah, my experience in New York was a very interesting one. It's not the experience that Sam Darnold's having right now. It's pretty opposite for two kids in Exactly. County.
So, you know, talking a little bit more about the rest of your journeyman professional career. So a couple highlights, and you've played all over the place, but do you have any good stories? Let's start with the Port Orthez in France. How was France?
That's funny. Port Orthez in France was a pretty interesting experience. You know, I played.
Shouldn't say pas français.
You're sending shivers down my spine with that, with all the memories I had over there. So I had a really good rookie year in the D League, and then the season ended pretty early. So I joined Port Orthez. They were number one team in France, and we actually won the French Cup when I was there. The first time they did that in 60 years, which was a pretty big deal. But, you know, living in France as a 21-year-old, you practice twice a day. It was not the best experience in the world. You know, it's basically there to make some cash and come home. I actually started developing a back injury there too, which kind of ended my career a few, you know, 8 years later. But France was interesting. I mean, it's a different style and different culture of basketball than the States. So
a little soft.
Not necessarily soft. I mean, this is a long time ago. So the style of play has changed a lot, but it wasn't for me. I was coming from camp with working with the Knicks, running a, you know, Pat Riley offense to now going over to France, it was running in the NBA offenses and then going to play in the European offense, which is like kind of how the Warriors play. Now, moving the ball, shooting and different things like that, which is a great brand of basketball, but being a 7-footer doesn't really, you don't really fit those categories.
So how about what happens when you end up in Fujiangxing, China?
China was a trip, man. I was there for I was only there for a month.
What city?
Junjun, I think it was. Southern.
Oh, the Southern province.
But yeah, Junjun.
I have a factory there.
You know what factory was there?
Which one?
So the owner of my team owned YYK Zippers. So I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
If you look at your zipper right now, it's going to say YYK on it. It's biggest. I'm 100%. And so I was over there. I was only there for a month, 6 weeks or something like that. The arena we played in was Staples Center, state-of-the-art, beautiful arena. I mean, this place is amazing. And across the street, they were building a soccer stadium. And they broke ground. I remember right around when I got there. When I left 6 weeks later, it was a completed,
almost
finished,
done.
Home Depot Center soccer stadium. They had three crews going 24 hours a day. Right. It was insanity. I mean,
zero workers' comp laws.
Yeah, no.
No actual pay, but they
worked like
that. I don't think he got breaks very much either, but it was insane what they did there. Wow. And then the owner's son was 16, 17, and he would sit on the bench with us. And this is when the Backstreet Boys were kind of big. And so he would have this comb over side thing. He would sit on the bench and smoke cigarettes on the bench and yell at the coach during a game. And there's 10 to 15,000 people.
That's awesome.
In the 10 to 15,000 people at the game, it's a big deal over there. We're playing, and this kid's legs crossed, little kid with hair part combed over and cussing out the coach and smoking cigarettes during the game. That is
amazing.
It's a Saturday Night Live skit.
Yeah.
It's a trip, dude. I can't even start to explain,
So you round out. So you round out a cultural experience with, France, China, and then at the Carajeros de Santiago in Puerto Rico. How was that?
Yeah. Santurce, actually. The owner of my team was actually Ricky Martin's manager. So he made his money. He actually had Ricky Martin and Mana. Oz actually really liked Ricky. I like Mana a lot. They're a great band.
Lots of fun in the locker room that I
bet. Oh, yeah. Wait, with Ricky Martin?
Keep moving.
I'm going to. So that team was pretty cool because we were the number one team in Puerto Rico. We had some guys on the team that actually beat Team USA in the Olympics, and there were some gold medals, medalists on the team, which was kind of cool. Puerto Rico's great because there's a game every other day, small, tight, hot gyms. There's probably, 4,000 people per game. It's all over the island. Great league. First year there, I had a great experience played really well. I went there three times, actually. The first time I went there, had a great experience. We went to the finals. They actually ended up cutting me before the finals because they wanted to bring in some other guy. They ended up losing in the finals, which is fine with me. And then the next year I went back and played for a team called Caguas. And Caguas, there's a theme about playing overseas, and we call it getting funny with the money. So it's not like the United States where
all right, pay attention, off, Dan. This is gonna be good.
You fill out a 10-4 and you get your W-2 earnings, and it comes every 2 weeks. They get funny with the money. I've been paid cash in a shoebox. I've had money wired. I've had checks. There's every different form of payment possible I've had playing overseas, and I have some teammates that had some even better stories playing in Russia or wherever they were. Just getting a duffel bag of cash and then depositing
and stolen,
it next week. In the next week, getting a duffel bag of cash and kind of looking in at it and noticing, wow, this might be the same money I'm getting paid, but hey, it's deposited and wired back. So it's on. So I was in Puerto Rico and they were getting funny with the money, and I was there for 6 weeks. They didn't pay me. And so I was like, all right, I call my agent. I'm like, dude, I'm not here for free. I have other opportunities somewhere else in the world I can play and actually get paid, what have you. And so this team, they strung me out for, 8 weeks. And then finally, I was like, all right, I told my agent, listen, I mean, it was one more week, and then I'm just going to go back home. I have to. You always get a return ticket. You always get a return ticket. You
thank never God. Write that down. Always get a return ticket.
Yeah, always have a return. It's always, and it's open, right? So, I had this team, Caguas, won the championship the year before, and so they had a ton of, you know, I think they had money, whatever. But I had a brand new Ford Expedition for my rental car that I could drive around, right? And I had like a half a tank of gas in it, and this is like Tuesday, so I was like, all right. I was going anywhere I could to burn this gas down because I was like, there's no way I'm leaving a drop of gas in this car. And then finally, when they say we're not paying you, I was like, all right, I'm out. So I booked my flight the night for like that Friday. And I was on like E, like I had to be on fumes in this thing. Right. And so I was like, these guys, you know what? I'm going to find a way to get back at them. So I waited until this thing was shaking, drove up to the American Airlines curb, rolled the windows down, turned the heat on, cranked the stereo, got out of the car, left it running, went into the airport, checked on, went through security, checked my flight, left the island.
With the car in the terminal.
Yes.
Driveway.
Yes.
Nice.
You don't mess with this. Yes.
So I get home the next day, my agent calls and goes, hey, Eric, got an interesting call from Puerto Rico about your departure. And I'm like, what's that? And he goes, did you leave your car running in the loading zone? I'm like, yeah. Why would you do that? I'm like, well, they owe me $20,000. They're not paying me. At least I'm going to get them back for five grand for a tow and impound and
yeah.
You know what? So he's like, your days in Puerto Rico are done, Eric. That's it. And so I was like,
They didn't pay me anyway.
Pretty broke care about it, I'm sure. Yeah.
And so it's funny. So how about this? The next year comes around. These are summer jobs. So a team in Puerto Rico actually brought me back the next summer, and we were playing really well. We were on a run, and I actually broke my hand in the finals, game one of the finals in the three-game series. And so I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm flying home. Well, that night, the team owner took me out for drinks and started building a pile of cash in front of me to come out and play with my broken hand. And so he got up.
That is persuasive.
Swear to God. He started at like $4,000. I got him up like $7,500. And so I was like, all right. So the next day I had my hand wrapped up like you would an NFL player in a game. And then went out and played one-handed, actually played really well, which was hilarious. And then, we lost, and then I flew home, and that was it. But my experiences in Puerto Rico were pretty interesting.
Now, let me ask you, did this particular owner make sure that he drove you to the airport and didn't let you drive yourself?
Yeah. Did I have a car team? I think I had a car. So, yeah. But they were cool. They paid me, and they paid me more than that.
Yeah, apparently, right?
Yeah. So it was all good.
Your hand in $100
bills. So are you seeing the connection here, Dan? Obviously, my professional experience for a brief time in the NFL and then in Canada is, like, look at how much fun these guys got.
Oh, he's having a ball.
I mean, and they don't get tackled, right?
Oh, that's true. In theory, anyway, right? You got to pretend your knee hurts every once in a while, but that's really pretty much it.
Yeah, well, it's not fun being in all these weird places of the world with no friends.
Yeah, no way.
That sucks, but I'm glad to laugh and tell about it now.
Yeah, and Eric, let's be honest too. Like, there's not a chance in hell, other than getting drafted in the first five picks and having a 20-year NBA career, you wouldn't trade it for anything. Am I right?
I would trade it for my medical bills that I'm sustaining over the years. I do look back.
I love the honesty on this guy, huh?
And I
a lot of people have learned from my experiences, definitely. I mean, and I'll be honest, you can take this as a humble brag if you want or not, but after I fell to the second round, there was a big change where guys just said, screw it, I'm one and done, or going out of high school. It really changed things because there was me and a couple other examples of guys that came back. And so your window to get to the league is very small.
Yeah.
And so if you have your chance, you got to take it. And so people will say, because if you stay another year, it's a devaluation period. It's not an evaluation period.
Sure.
And so my story, I use a lot and help, you know, give not advice and guidance sometimes, but not, I never tell someone what they should or shouldn't do. I just tell them my story and then let them make a decision from there. So.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Our listeners are going to make a pretty positive decision about how they feel about you. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I think so.
Good. Thanks.
So moving on, Eric, like one more thing before we let you go. And again, we really appreciate you spending some time with us on the holidays. What's your opinion of the holidays, having a little kid? And do you think that kids should have more toys, or do you think we should pull back a little bit? What do you think?
Definitely should pull back. Holidays are amazing. My son's 22 months old, and we're having a blast with him. We actually just took him to see Santa this morning, which was pretty funny. He loves Santa. He gets the concept already, so it's pretty awesome. This is the first year he kind of gets Christmas, so we've gone completely and fully insane, over the top. We're setting ourselves up for failure as well, too, because if we don't keep this pace up for years following, it's going to be, you know, bad news bears. But I think we should rein it back. I got my wife two nice things. I don't know what she got me. Obviously, you know, it's on my Amex, but we'll see what she got me. And then I don't know. Kids today are very spoiled and entitled, but my kid's definitely going to get spoiled this year.
All right. Well, yeah, I got three daughters. I'm screwed myself in the long run. But Eric, I would say this, you have been a fantastic guest. We want to thank you. And I want to ask for the ability to bring you on later on in the season as we get closer to the NBA tournament, because I think we're going to get a lot of positive feedback from our listeners that you're going to need to be coming back more often than just this. So are you okay with committing to that now on air?
100%, yes. And we can talk UCLA basketball next time, too, about the next coach.
Oh, what's that?
Well, obviously, you know, Sam Gilbert is no longer with us. So when he – if you look at the time of his passing and the success of UCLA basketball, they both kind of correlated together. So we'll have to talk about that as well, too.
Oh, we'd be happy to. And hopefully next time you're on, there's more to talk about when it comes to UCLA basketball, because we have a decent record, but we lost to the only two, you know, any top 30 teams that we played. We lost to both of them. So, but who knows? I mean, there's calls for Alford's head already, and the group is up in arms. We'll see what happens. But you're a Southern California guy, so I'm sure you can appreciate a good UCLA team is, you know, quote unquote, good for the college football scene. But I grew up in the Midwest. I've always loved watching Kansas. Obviously love
you. I can tell you grew up in the Midwest from your accent, by the way. It's not hard to pick up on.
Well, you know what else you can tell from why I'm from the Midwest? My overall attitude. So I know what it's like.
Sigh.
Yeah, I know what it's like to shovel the driveway.
Yeah.
So but hey, Eric, thank you again for joining us, man. Can't wait to have you on again. You have a great Christmas, and thanks again, bro.
Thank you. Same to you guys.
Dan, I thought that was a pretty good interview. What did you think?
I thought it was great. I think he's hilarious.
I agree.
And apparently very tall.
I'm hoping. Oh yeah. Can you imagine you standing next to him?
No. I would love to see a picture of that.
They would literally be like the movie Twins.
Yes, it would. You
know, with Arnold and Danny DeVito.
Yeah, because he's what, 7'1", and I'm 5'. I don't even know, 6.5, I think.
You're
5'6.5. I should be 5'7", but I think I'm shrinking. So, yeah.
Okay. Well,
that would be an awesome picture.
Do you know the part in the movie Twins where where Arnold Schwarzenegger is trying to convince Danny DeVito that they're twins?
I'm your twin.
We're not identical twins. And Danny DeVito goes, oh, obviously, from the moment I met you, I thought I was looking in a fucking mirror.
Remember when those guys were big, big, huge stars?
Oh yeah, come on. Times have changed, but they're still stars, and we got to appreciate them. Two of my favorite actors, neither one maybe necessarily winning Academy Awards, but still fun people to watch.
Oh man,
right. So, quick NFL recap. You know, your Steelers, now that we know that you have a hometown, you know, connection to them.
I guess, yeah.
So they're back.
Yeah.
They're hanging in there.
Nice.
Yeah. And then from an NFL recap standpoint, things are still playing out. We don't have a lot of time. We don't want to bore our listeners. Not as much NFL. We'll get more to that later. But from a standpoint of going forward and how well the NFL is set up their league. There is 15 plus games this week with playoff implications. Like there
this
is,
week?
Yeah, it's like it's amazing. There's so many things happening that could affect the playoffs going forward.
Holy cow.
So the point is that the parity aspect, the entertainment aspect, there is games that shouldn't mean anything that are mean everything.
Wow.
So we're going to watch that. Something's brewing. Something's brewing was at the Rams Eagles game, Sunday Night Football. So there was there was something's brewing at Sunday Night Football.
Yeah.
Make sure we get that posted onto the website. And I actually need to get the Sports Illustrated pictures posted.
Yeah, because you have some cool pictures.
I do. I think so.
Definitely. All right. Let's do that.
Speaking of Sports Illustrated, so I recorded the replay. And
that's right, because when we talked last,
mm-hmm. it was
you
coming
had
on
been
that
to
night.
The real thing, but right, it was on TV that after
night.
We talked.
It was
right?
coming on that night when we posted it. So I missed it that night, but I found it on the following Sunday. So now that I have been recording. You remember how I said mezzanine and orchestra?
Yes.
I am on TV pretty much, I don't know, 60% of the broadcast.
Oh, my God.
To some extent.
Really?
Yeah. You can see my monkey's butt. Hair problem.
Is that what you call that?
Yeah.
Monkey's butt?
Or skamica, skin yamica. So
that's
I'm
wild.
All over TV. Got a couple I wouldn't call them close-ups, but definitely
but,
closer
yeah.
shots.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, all over
that's
TV.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. Moving on to Holiday Party Madness. I know we mentioned that last week we ended the show with the 12 Days of Christmas.
Yes.
And then I said I was going to do Miley Cyrus at the Christmas, at the holiday party.
Yes.
So not only did I rock a Christmas plaid suit, okay, from
mm-hmm.
Oppa Suits.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone kept saying, "Oh my God, this is so awesome!" And I couldn't even hide it. I'm like, "This suit costs $120." So, to put that in perspective,
tailoring.
Don't light a cigarette near me.
Right.
Okay. This thing might go up in flames. Number one. Number two. I am so freaking hot. I can't even tell you.
Yeah.
So here's one thing I do want to mention.
No, do you mean hot because it's a cheap suit? You personally were perspiring, or you're damn sexy?
I wasn't
in
talking
a Christmas suit.
I wasn't talking Zoolander hot. I wasn't like this. You know, Hansel's so hot right now.
Yeah.
No, I was talking physically hot.
Ah.
And we had our holiday party downtown in this like huge ultra club.
Mm.
So not only did I get to go up on stage with a DJ booth behind me as if Calvin Harris was going to roll out and spin, which my boss got behind me and spun behind me with the headphones on and like did the hand wave and everything. Which
yeah, is your boss a big DJ? Is he scratching the beats?
He does it on the weekends. But this club, literally, you had to walk over homeless people to get to the club, right? Because it's downtown
LA.
And there's a full-on velvet rope, and it is a big club. After they closed down our party, they got it re-ready for, like, Wiz Khalifa was going on that night.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so I got to do, like, a two-minute intro before I did the Miley Cyrus song. And I was contemplating saying something like, "Oh, it's the first time I've been to this club not on ecstasy." Even though I'd never been there before.
Right.
But I thought there's laser lights. We had a light show. We had digital media happening. I literally thought that it would go over like a screen door on a submarine.
Right.
But I still thought everyone would get the point. But I wimped out and I didn't say
it. Oh,
anything.
You didn't say it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, man.
I made a couple, okay jokes. And then I rolled into Miley Cyrus. However, behind me, on a giant TV screen was playing the Miley Cyrus video to Party in the USA while I rewrote the lyrics to it. And I'm not going to do the whole thing, but I just want to hear, we've talked about some of the cleverness.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Pulled up, we work by LAX. I'm in the insurance business.
That's true.
And there's a lot of construction going on at our office. Just remember that.
All right,
ready?
Yes.
Rolled up to the office by LAX. My insurance day starts again. Welcome to the land of great service. Woo, better get your time cards in. A jump from the cab always feels like as I'm out of time. Looking to my right and I see construction zone signs. This is all so crazy. Why can't I just be famous? My mind is turning in my A, staying homesick. There's too much pressure. Am I nervous? That's when Elsa comes on. That's the front desk girl, by the way.
Okay.
When Elsa comes on the radio. That the sales meeting's on. That the sales meeting's on. That the sales meeting's on. So we put our hands up. It's the holiday song. Let the stress fly away. Dodging the red like, yeah. You know, black and red, like stay above budget or below.
Yeah.
Dodging the red like, yeah. Avoiding the dips like, yeah. We got our hands up. This year has been long, but you know we're going to be okay. Yeah. I was the best broker in the USA. What do you think?
Wow.
Huh?
Wow.
So I did that in front of the whole company. Well, I mean, not the whole company.
But how many people would you say, though?
300.
No.
Yes. Yeah. And then they shot confetti. Out of a cannon, right at the end, right
while
at the crescendo.
You're still
on? Yeah, it was so cool.
Nice.
Here's the one thing MTV I do want to mention.
MTV Awards.
Oh, I got so you know I always talk about my hair. I'm nervous.
You do. Yeah, you mentioned.
I need to stop that. I was so nervous about my hair, and I didn't want to like look like that guy. I wore a wig, but it also gives me confidence. I wore a wig and sunglasses. It's almost like my crutch, if you will. And I'm not, but I.
What kind of wig are we talking about?
We're talking a wig that matched my beard perfectly, and that it has just the right amount of gray, like a Just for Men wig.
Oh, my God.
So I wore a wig to feel
Can
more
comfortable.
Can we
post this on the website?
Of course.
Somethingsbrewing.com?
Absolutely. absolutely.
Oh, my.
So I just want to tell you that I was nervous about going into it, but I think I will be
awesome.
Asked to do it again.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on. As we talked about 2 weeks ago, we'll do another recap of the pause laws. So pause law number two, after pause law number one, which is keep a positive attitude at all times. Number two is remember to pause and reflect. So we're going to talk about this for another just a few minutes, I promise you. It's the holiday season, so we want everyone to start thinking about getting your New Year's resolutions together. And when I say resolutions, I mean it, because anyone who tries to make one gigantic big New Year's resolution, I don't know about you, Dan, but have you ever succeeded in that?
No, it's too big.
It's too big. So what I'd like everyone to consider doing is I'll just tell you what I'm doing, which is I'm pausing and I'm reflecting on a couple key buckets in my life that I think, you know, take it for what it's worth. Try it. Don't try it. Whatever. Again, you made it this far into the broadcast. You're still listening. So bucket number one, your wife or partner. All right. Focus on the pause and reflect aspect of your wife and partner. I'm going to focus on going into 2019, a continued commitment to the right level of communication and trying to save money and not have to go see a shrink together. next category. If you have kids, that's the next category.
Yeah.
Notice I did the wife or partner first, because you got to take care of that first before it can be good to the kids, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So now you take care of the kids. What I'm going to do is not let work affect the time that I am with the kids as much. That's what I'm going to try and do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've called it being present and being less short, because our kids have no idea that I have a customer service issue going on with a client New York.
Right?
They don't know, they don't care, and they shouldn't know or care.
Right.
So I'm going to work on that. And I'm not saying that I, you know, I'm borderline should be imprisoned, but
But
to the overall point,
mm-hmm.
we've talked about next level growth.
Yeah,
trying to get folks to the next level.
Right.
Get myself to the next level. Because as a reminder, I've never met a mirror I didn't like. Okay, third bucket of the four buckets to focus on, career. So, you got to pay the bills. You gotta have enough commitment to bring in that bread, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
What did Chenoweth say? Funny money.
Funny money.
You gotta have enough commitment to the funny money to be able to pay for the ridiculous mortgage in the Lower West Side.
Right. Exactly.
So focusing on the career, pause and reflect on that, but trying to establish simply this: the right balance of what you give to your company and what you get in return. I'm not asking anyone to consider to be a slacker. I'm asking everyone to consider being more efficient with their time. And when you're working, you're working. When you're with your kids, you're giving your kids the focus and the dedication, because I am as guilty as anyone of that simple fact. I waste, and don't, there's not a person on the planet that works in corporate America that doesn't waste time.
Right,
so
right.
How about we try this? Waste less time at the office and give less time to the office when you're at home. That's all I'm saying. So from a pause and reflect standpoint, does that resonate with
it
you, Dan?
Absolutely does.
Okay.
Because for a lot of people, work just fills any space that appears
Period.
To be empty.
Yeah. And that, and what's not,
and you got to protect that space, right?
Thank you. And I'm, and again, I'm not a social media purveyor. So then you get into that habit or that issue of work fills the gaps. And if work's not filling a gap, then social media fills the gaps. Mm-hmm. And Instagram fills the gaps. And this fills the gaps. And that means what has been lost. Because right. if a piece of pie, there's only 100% available on the life of pie.
Right.
So, all right. Last bucket, personal health. I believe that before you can truly be good to others, you need to be good to yourself. But I don't put personal health at number one because I still need to take care of my wife and kids and make money to be able to pay the bills. I'll deal with my personal health at the end. But I still believe to have the best level of personal health will be the best person for you and others. So
sure.
refocusing on that, I'll tell you one thing that I did not make a commitment to in 2018. I paid money to play in a basketball league. I showed up once. All right.
Yep.
But to make a point to see how much I would enjoy it, I went the other night on Thursday night and played with a great group of guys, you know, bumping and played
yeah,
with
yeah.
There's Division I basketball players out there, right? You know, I was a high school basketball player, college football player, but enjoyed it. And that's a piece of the personal health that I need to do
right,
more.
Right.
I've also taken a little bit of a hiatus on reading. I'm going to get back into reading.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say hiatus, I mean like a month and a half. I've already started the second series of the Red Sparrow series with the espionage CIA versus Russia deal. But I'm typically more of a futuristic dystopian novel guy. So I'm going to come back on that. But I don't want to have any time in 2019 where I'm not reading. So from a personal health standpoint, let's recap it though. Four buckets. The pause and reflect on the wife or partner bucket, the kids bucket, the career bucket, and the personal health bucket. Don't make any grand New Year's resolutions,
right,
all right? Just focus on those four buckets and try and push yourself to the next level in each bucket. Push your wife or partner's buttons where you can to try and be more on the same page,
yeah.
communicatively, collaboratively. Be more present with the kids. Focus the right amount of time with the career. Don't waste time. And then do something for your own personal health. So that's the recap. And everybody, do your best to get through, Christmas coming up in a few days. I can't wait to come back and pause cast about that over the next couple of weeks. Because the holidays are not over. I like the holidays are a good... between the multiple types of religious holidays, I mean, it's a 2-month process.
Oh yeah.
So we're
sure.
This is only week two of
right.
of the holiday season for
right.
the something's brewing. So in closing, remember, when you keep a positive attitude, something's always brewing. Take it easy.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.